Welcome to the Boardroom of Transformation. This is Successful Chaos, where we help high-achieving wealth creators organize the madness, grow the value, and exit with purpose. Around here, we believe in an abundance mindset, one that multiplies freedom, impact, and legacy, and we're building a wow community, work optional wealth, for those who want more than just success, they want significance. I'm Brian Sarf, your host of Successful Chaos, and with me today is the one and only amazing storyteller, Chris Hare. Chris, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Brian. Really looking forward to this.
You know, I met you through a friend of ours in St. Louis and connected you and I. We hit it off from the beginning wonderfully. And your background is just amazing of the work you've done before you got into being an entrepreneur and doing the storytelling. So for our listeners, go back and tell a bit of your the amazing companies that you've worked for and the work you've done and talk through that for us, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. So I did a career transition in my early 30s when I realized I'm a creative person and I needed to fully embrace that rather than following the path that other people, you know, that I thought other people wanted me to follow. So I went into advertising, worked, my primary client was Microsoft, worked with pretty much every audience from developer up to the C-suite. And right away, my sweet spot became clear of finding the human story in the dry, the boring, the technical, and really being able to bring that to life. From there, transitioned to Amazon, worked at Amazon Marketplace, owned acquisition through year one for selling on Amazon from a content standpoint. Did our first brand campaign on the homepage of Amazon, built the entrepreneur storytelling program from there. From there, went to Microsoft. And did global content marketing there. And then 2016 started my company, The Storied Future, and, you know, had, you know, some great logos, worked with Amazon, Microsoft, GoDaddy, SAP, Concur, et cetera. But something really interesting
happened. Not a bad list.
No, not a bad list at all. What was interesting though, is when, you know, right around 2019, 2020, I started to move into from marketing into strategic narrative. And, you know, when you're working with those large companies, for the most part, you're, at least in my space, you're building a lot of things for them to put in the pipes and shoot at prospective buyers, but you don't really see the needle move a lot, right? And so I like seeing change. And so that's really when I started to move into strategic narrative with, you know, really complex transformations, transitions, transactions, and building a narrative to align everyone. And the first time I did that was with a mid-market paint distributor, and it's 5 years on, it's still transforming the company. And I was like, that's what I want to do.
Wow. What was there one moment when you knew that this was your calling?
So I would say the aha was like narrative is what I want to do is writing or rewriting narratives that shift the future. But the aha moment was really, there were a couple of them and the type of work that I did with you, how I got there was I started my podcast. And like many things, we start because we think we know the future that it's going to create. And it took me somewhere completely different that's far better. But I started it to, you know, build my brand and for business development. And I had on the CEO of Logitech, and he told this remarkable story that I don't know if he's ever told publicly before. And his head of comms reached out afterwards and said, you know, that was remarkable. Can we make a part of employee onboarding globally? So I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. And I'd been coaching leaders for years, but they were friends and I would do it as a gift. And I didn't know it was narrative coaching. I would just do it. And these people would have these pretty crazy transformations. And then I had someone come on my podcast. We had worked together at Amazon and he was the exec chair of FTD, the flower company. And they parachuted him in as CEO with 5 days notice, new strategy, layoffs. And he ends up using the podcast to earn trust because no one knew who he was outside of the executive team and ends up leading this remarkable turnaround inside of 6 months. And he told me afterwards, and this was the aha moment where he said, you know, for me, the most remarkable part for me, all that was great, that success, but is how telling my story is hearing my story is transforming me. And that was the aha of that. You know, we can tell polished stories all day long and you're really great at that. Right. And that's what I do for a living, but that's just one part of the challenge. The biggest part, in my opinion, and the most important part is how do we find the hidden stories, the stories we've forgotten about, the stories that we've buried that are the stories that will truly shift the future. How do we find those and those transformative stories? Like That's the thing for me.
Like, that's amazing that someone can hear their own story and it affects them differently because of the way you pulled it out of them than it had before. And it had more depth and more meaning, and it connected more of the, you know, the heart and the head and their business strategy and who they were. And you call those atomic stories. So explain atomic stories and what they are, and you know, and how you help everybody write their own and really dig in to figure out the most powerful ones for each person.
Yeah, absolutely. So the origin was actually when I was working with big tech. Is there's often this belief, and it doesn't matter if you're a big company or a small company. It's, hey, let's get some, you know, we've got smart people that work here. We can hire consultants or an agency. We can get smart people in a room and come up with the big idea, you know, for the marketing campaign or for the strategy or whatever it is. And what I would do is, just because I would often work in spaces where I didn't have the answers, I would just go and create with the audience and the people who influence them. And over time, as I just built those muscles of interviewing people and had that curiosity, like, let's not even talk about the product or the service. I want to know about you. Like, what keeps you up at night? What lights you up? And looking at their energy and what shifted and things like that. And eventually saw, like, actually, it's not this big story that we, the company, think we need to tell. It's these little tiny hidden moments that have this energy and matter that we can tap into. So then when I started to shift into working with leaders, I realized, like, wait a second, there's so much power here of, you know, if I ask you, like, you're a phenomenal storyteller. You're the most prolific storyteller I've ever met. Volume and quality, volume and quality. But what's interesting, though, is if I ask a leader to tell me their life journey, I don't think they're lying to me, but the most compelling, powerful part of what their story is something that they probably aren't going to tell me, right? Because we get these talk tracks, you know, that we use day in and day out, or we have an internal narrative that drives the decisions we make, how we show up, all of those things, right? So if I ask me to tell them their story, like I said, I don't think they're trying to mislead me. It's just, this is the story they've been telling. So my job really is to find those hidden atomic stories from across the journey and have different mechanisms for doing that, that you can tap into both for transforming yourself, but also for making your vision of the future a reality. So it could be, and sometimes those can have really tiny impacts. So it could be, I'm your employee and you're coaching me up, and here's one little story that you're going to share that could shift things for me. Or it could be something that could shift your entire trajectory. But that's kind of the genesis of it.
Well, when you think about some of the current clients that you're working with, or you can even share that when you and I work together, of how you help someone get into a state where they can just free flow and really share a lot of stories.
Yeah. So I think part of the way I do it is kind of messing with time scales a little bit to jar people a little out of the present or of their own kind of frame that they look at the world through. So starting with kind of this movie visualization where it's the first day of retirement or the last week of life, and having people visualize, okay, what did the arc of your life, what has it looked like and what will it look like? And seeing those scenes, both the good and the bad. So if you're thinking about, you know, why we're even doing this work, oftentimes people will come to me and start with, you know, executive branding, thought leadership, that sort of thing. And they absolutely get that. But what also happens is there's these, you know, elevation in leadership, clarity of purpose, clarity of vision, and things like that that happen. But when most people think of executive brand, it's how do I look good to have X result happen? And as you saw, like, what ended up in the process can happen, because my job, I don't view my job as to burnish someone's reputation, right? It's to like, let's actually look at the truth. I mean, as much as memory can get us to the truth, but the journey that you were on, the good and the bad that we can tap into, and what are the lessons we can learn from the good and the bad, and then how do we use that to shape? So we start with the future visioning piece. And then we do storytelling from childhood all the way forward. But then also, I was thinking about this idea last night and going back and forth with ChatGPT on this concept of, you know, we have a movie that we view and that kind of drives how we view the world and how we show up. But there's also a second movie, which is how people view us, right? And do those match, right? So imagine a world where the way that Brian Sarf perceives himself is also the way that, you know, his values and his vision and everything else matches how he shows up in the world. Like, that's amazing, right? And of course, we'll never fully get there, but kind of growing growing there, right? But so that's the last part, is those 360s where I interview people who in some cases know the leader, have known them for decades, care about them, want them to succeed, and getting into, like, you know, with you, like, hey, what do you think Brian's number one value is? Tell me a story about a time that Brian demonstrated that value. And in the same way that hearing your own story is powerful, having somebody that cares about you and knows you well tell you a story about how they see you can be remarkably transformative for people.
Yeah, they were fantastic for me. The stories that friends and coworkers and strategic partners I work with and clients and family that all shared was awesome.
Is there one that jumped out at you?
My friend Jeff, his comments were awesome that he shared with me. You know, he went through a tough time where they had a boating accident, and I followed up with him and called him and went and saw him and talked with him. And it's just what I do. And to him, it meant the world. And he shared back of just it increased the depth of our friendship and trust and integrity. And the values of how I live my life and what I say that I do, you know, showed through that day. And he shared that story back to me. And that was awesome to hear that from him, because I had never heard that before. But to hear that feedback was incredible.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because for you, that's just the way you show up. But then to have somebody, and so it's something you might not think about on your own, right? But to have somebody call that out, I think it can bring about, one, encouragement to do that all the more. Two, encouragement to do it even more mindfully. But three, you'd be potentially using that story to mentor or train others. And there's countless other ways too.
And another one that comes to mind is my wife told you about Rainbow Grits.
Yeah.
and, you know, it's just something I did as a dad of three daughters, that on Saturday mornings before we had our day of activity and that, I cooked breakfast for the girls, you know, and we'd have letter pancakes that I would put their letter in there. I was trying to be a master of how do I get their letter of their first name and their pancakes. When I flip it over, it's right. And I'd make them eggs and all that. But then I made grits, and I had these different bowls, and I would make the color of the rainbow in the grits. And then I would lay it on their, I'd lay it on their plate. You know, the rainbow would go across the top, and then we'd have the eggs and the pancakes and all that. And they just got a kick out of it on Saturday mornings. And they loved looking forward to it. And it was just a great way for me to connect with the girls on Saturday mornings. And, you know, they're all in town this summer now. Now I've got one in med school, one just graduated college, and the youngest is, she'll be a junior this year at Colorado State. And so this summer I joked the other day that we need to have a morning breakfast so I can make rainbow grits for them. And they're all fired up for whenever we do that soon. So maybe it'll be this weekend.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And I love that, right? Because I think that's the beauty of the process. You know, not that I'm some genius that I kind of stumbled into it, but it's this idea of, like, let's gather all the inputs. Because if you and I start with this just super narrow, like, okay, how do we talk about, you know, how someone can exit their company or whatever, right? When we broaden it and look at all the things that make you you, like the way you lit up just telling that story just now. Like, hey, that story can bring joy into your life every time you think about it or tell it, right? And that's also part of your legacy that I can pretty much guarantee you one or more of them will do the same thing with their kids. And it's something that long after you're gone, people can also remember you by, right? So it's really cool.
Well, you and I started working on this last August. We did a number of meetings over video to get to know each other, and then the interview process with me. Then you came out and you spent 3 days with me, and we told a bunch of stories, and I shared all these different stories that we recorded that you transcribed and put together. Then we did the 360 interview. So then you delivered a document back to me of my atomic stories, and I'm working on putting all those together. But I wanted to put it together for me was... yeah, because I didn't really have a grandpa when I grew up. Both of them were, my dad's dad passed away before I was born. And my mom's dad passed away when I was like 6 or 7. I didn't really get to know him. I knew my great grandfather longer than I knew my grandfather. And I never had them to grow up with. And I go, man, if I don't want that to happen to, that my kids don't have my stories, and that especially my grandkids. And so I wanted to spend time with you to get my stories out and put them on video, put them on paper to share them with my girls. I'm gonna write a book this summer with a lot of these things I've learned over the years in them. But I also wanted to share it with my clients, with the team that I work with, the strategic partners I work with, just so we can have a bigger impact in the world and help change the lives of entrepreneurs and share our stories and connect and just do amazing things. Because when I work with entrepreneurs and business owners, you know, they usually have the financial and the revenue and the sales and the marketing down in their companies. But when we look at if they're going to exit, where they're going to transfer their company to their kids, or if they're going to sell to a third party, the question that they always score the lowest on is, what's my purpose? What's my vision for life after my company? And what are my stories? And so they're stuck there almost every time.
And I think what's interesting too is Jonathan Adler, he's a narrative psychologist, and he talks about the fact that when we create the future, it's not necessarily creating it out of nothing. It's taking pieces of the past and constructing those into the future or different possible futures, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what's so beautiful, you know, when you opened at the top is, you know, Successful Chaos, right, is the podcast. And I'm going to turn the tables on you. We didn't prepare for this. All right. But
unprepared's best.
Yeah, exactly. But tell the story about what we ended up calling with your narrative Chaos Creek in terms of that amazing memory from when you were a kid. Talk to me about that and how we got there.
Yeah. So I grew up in a small neighborhood, middle-class neighborhood in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. And there was a creek near our house. I used to ride my bike down to it, and we would always go down there and play in the creek. And, we'd go fishing, we'd go hunting for snakes. We'd shoot our BB guns at all the cans and things down there that we'd find. It was fun to go down there and explore and see the world and be part of nature and all that and hike through there. And that was fantastic. But what really got me fired up was whenever there'd be a storm, they would change the creek and the creek would be blocked with all the branches and trash and all these things that are in the way. And I would go down there as soon as the water got, low enough and it wasn't, crazy rushing waters in there, and we'd go clean it up. And today I look at that water as it's the cash flow of a business. And all the chaos that's in the way, the trash, the debris, rocks, things like that we have to move, that we would get rid of those out of there to let the water flow again. And we would do that for miles down the creek until we ran out of energy. And then we'd go home and do our thing. But I just connecting that successful chaos of the creek, of helping it get cleaned up so it ran again, to all the work I did in my corporate career with Lear and GE, and now what I'm doing for entrepreneurs, it is helping to organize chaos and to bring some calm to it and to bring it and to make it successful, because business is chaos. And you can't predict everything that's going to happen. And so connecting that through, and that's how we put Successful Chaos with the creek, Chaos Creek that we're calling it, and everything, and put it all together. And I've been working on this my entire life. I've always told everybody that I love the most complicated word problems that they can bring to me, so I can try and figure them out. And I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but I know who to call. I know the estate attorneys and the tax attorneys and the CPAs and the business brokers and the investment bankers, the CFOs that I need to get a hold of to make it happen. And I just love that part of work. And now I'm cleaning up everybody else's, creek that's flooded with a bunch of chaos in the way, and we got to go clean it up.
Yeah. I mean, the things that really jumped out at me is, one, how much joy it brought you. When I tell people that story, I'm like, the only thing Brian liked more than doing that is when it rained again and wrecked it so he could go do it again,
I could fix it again.
And like you said, that was this arc over your career of going into those spaces, and you may not have known it at the time.
I didn't, and you helped me uncover it.
But I think here's the thing is, like, my assumption, if I'm going to, if I'm considering becoming a client of yours, is that you're going to be really solid on the, on the foundational stuff. But for me, if I'm in the middle of a storm and in the middle of chaos, the thing that's super attractive to me is that you're a guy who's been in tons of storms. You've been in the middle of a lot of mess, and you actually have joy and peace in the middle of it. And that's what I want, right? Give me what that guy has, right? Where everything else is, it's important, and but it's also in some senses table stakes compared to how is Brian going to change my outlook and change my life, essentially,
Yeah, we lived that in 2020 when COVID hit, with our business and with all of our clients, where the world was telling us we had to shut down, we all had to go home, and all the mask stuff that was going on, and our clients were, they're freaking out, personally because of what's going on with them and the people around them that are getting sick and that. And then the financial markets were falling apart. And so we just made the decision in our office that whatever the client, the next client we're going to talk to and meet, whatever they would like to do, that's what we're going to do. If they want to meet in person, we'll meet in person. If they want to talk over the phone, if they want to wear a mask, meet off site, whatever it would be. And so we stayed in the office. They considered us essential personnel. And we met with all of our clients, how they wanted to be met with. And we just really went into it with, you know, an abundance mindset and, you know, just having a, the ability to pivot. Mm-hmm. And to adapt the AQ, right? There was IQ when I was a kid, intelligence quotient, then EQ, and now it's AQ with adaptability quotient. And we adapted really well during COVID, made a great pivot. We changed our investment portfolio, communicated with our clients, called them, talked with them, were available. And we just tried to manage that chaos as much as we could. And what I wanted to make sure we did was not add stress to their life and not add chaos, but be a calm voice, faith in the future, thinking forward, you know, looking at ways we can take some stress away from them and some worry while the world was falling apart a bit.
Hmm. I'm curious for you, and I don't know if we ever got to this, but what is it that, I mean, there's obviously has to be some things that stress you out, right? What is it that can create chaos for you internally or just anxiety or keep you up at night or whatever it is?
The fastest way to get out of your head is to get into gratitude. And think about this. Who helped you get to where you are today? Who opened a door for you, spoke belief into you, gave you a second chance when you didn't deserve it? Make that list right now. Put down five names, then pick one. Call them, thank them. Don't wait, don't text, don't email. Pick up the phone and tell them. Gratitude is one of the most underrated wealth-building tools there is because it multiplies what matters. It realigns your values, and it reminds you you didn't do this alone. I'm Brian Sarf, live today intelligently motivated with an abundance mindset, host of the Successful Chaos Podcast, and a personal wealth manager helping leaders build significance, not just success. Visit us at intellisense.com, intellisense.com, or give us a call at 913-653-8783. You know, for me, it's when unknown things happen in the marketplace that we don't see coming, that drives me nuts because we have to think through it and figure out how it's going to impact our clients. You know, I don't like it. What stresses me out is when I get, bad news about anybody I care or love about. You know, that bugs me. I've got clients that are going through cancer treatment right now. I have clients that just lost parents and have lost loved ones in their life that they're dealing with. They're coming up on the first anniversary. Those things stress me out in there a bit. And when I can't be there for my family or I have a conflict, you know, and I can't be there for them, that bugs me. Hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the world doesn't bother me. I have faith in the future. We've had, if you look back, my dad was born in 1944 and you look to today and all the stuff we've been through as a world and a nation, as a people, it always seems like the apocalypse du jour of today. It's the end of the world. This yeah. time is different. It's time to jump off the ship into the ocean and swim away. And at the end of the day, the blue skies come, the sun comes back out, the storms go away, the flowers grow, and everything keeps running. And so it's good to keep a long-term perspective, especially with business and investing, that we want that long-term perspective and have faith that the future is going to be okay. Because the closer we pull anything forward, the more chaos is brought into it and the more variability. And sometimes the upward and lower limits of variability are just normal. And you're chasing something you can't control. It's when things go beyond the upper limit and the lower limit, you have to pay attention. But if you're in between chasing the normal variability, you don't see it when it's out of the range on the top or the bottom. And that's when you should be reacting, is on the top and the bottom, not the variability in the middle. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just human nature. We pull it too close to us and we need to step back and look at it into the future where it's a little more level and more controllable. Hmm.
That's because, why it's so important to have a guide along going on the ride with you.
Yeah, just having a great team of just knowing who to call of all the different people that you can bring into your life to keep things on track
Yeah.
is really important. Hmm. Yeah. Something else I talk with my clients about is when we're doing estate planning, okay, this is a really super topic. And I'm not going to talk about the boring side of estate planning or the things you have to think about as you go through it. But as a parent, as a grandparent, in wills and in trusts, you're able to share your thoughts, your values, how you made your money, the lessons you learned. And most people don't. Can you share a bit of why it's important and how just individuals can get their stories and share them and pass them down, you know, from one generation to the next so they don't get lost?
Yeah, it was interesting. I think it was last year, a college friend reached out and said, you know, I need to thank you. He said, my father-in-law just passed away. And back in 2008, you captured his life story on camera. And I said, I did. I didn't even remember. And it was playing at this guy's memorial service. But how impactful that was for the family. But I think, I mean, my upbringing was similar to yours. You know, I never met one of my granddads. The other one, I did one thing with him one time. We went to a Count Basie concert, and that was like the one thing that was so special, right? And I think one is there's that gift that I know that you believe is important to give of, you know, where did we come from, but also what were the beliefs that shaped us, what were our values, and being able to pass those along, but also to understand too, going back to the idea that it's not just about sharing the good stuff. It's also, what are the things that, you know, shaped us, or maybe harmed us in some ways. That's the most extreme version. But I remember, so recently I met with, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, and I met with a cousin of mine, and we hadn't seen each other since I was probably 5. And so I'm 48, she's in her 50s. And what was amazing is she and I are like wired so much the same. And I'm like, why did I not meet you? Or why did we not hang out for all these decades? You know, and it's like meeting a soulmate or something. But then as we're comparing stories about her family growing up and my family growing up, seeing the similarities for better or for worse, but then also seeing how her narrative was shaped and how my narrative was shaped and things like that. But I think if we don't proactively, like you're doing, if we don't tell those stories, not to control the narrative, but if we don't share our perspective, then people are largely left to guess. And I think having those gifts passed down, like those mm-hmm. It's not like when we're in the grave, we're going to be like, how much are people remembering me or how much are they not remembering me? Right. But, I think it's something that we can it's a gift that we can give and should give so that people can really see like, okay, how do I fit into the arc of history? Sorry, that was a long rambling answer, but I was thinking out loud.
Yeah. It's, I read a quote the other day. This really hit me that I think about is you die twice in your life. It's the day you actually die. And then it's the day that the last time somebody mentions your name.
Wow.
And you think through that and you want to have those because sometimes I have clients that they don't think their stories are that, like, you know, it's not telling some amazing story that somebody was an astronaut and, you know, cured cancer and, you know, circumnavigated the world 4 times and all this stuff they did. And they're like, well, what can I really add in? Well, the kids need to hear the lessons you learned around money, around life, around business, around work, around saving, the thoughts when you got married and the sacrifices you made, the bad times you had in life. You know, I'm thinking now with my girls that are now, you know, college age, there's a lot of stuff that happened when they were little that we never talked with them about, and they don't know it was part of my life, and, you know, and so I need to make sure that I'm talking about those things and the choices that we made and the lessons we learned and how that impacted our life and sharing those stories with my girls, just so they see that. And I want to live as an example to share those out loud through my podcast, as well as through our blogs and our newsletters and all that, to try and encourage others to share their stories with the people they love. And we offer to our clients to come in with their family, however many they want to bring in the office, set the guardrails of what I can and can't talk about. And then we can just host a family discussion and talk about some things and pull some things out and hopefully have mom and dad share some of their stories of wealth, of how they created it, how they saved it. You know, one of the things my wife and I did when we were starting to save was we lived on whoever had the lowest salary. And we were buying a house or a car or, you know, appliances or anything. We bought it on that lower salary so that if one of us got laid off, we wouldn't have to sell our car, move our home and change things and change our lifestyle. And so we did that forever. And so when I got fired, you know, I got fired twice. We were able to stay in the same house and do the same things and keep moving on, even though it was stressful, but we didn't have to uproot everything in our family and just what we had saved. And I want to make sure that my kids know that and hear that. I don't know if they've heard that before. So if they were listening to the podcast, there you go. Hopefully they're tuning in at some point, but I want to make sure they get shared with them.
Something came that I had never thought of before is just this. Yeah. I think what you're actually doing with your kids, what I'm doing with my kids is, pass along those stories that you capture, those artifacts, but also like people are story creation machines, right? So the way that they've observed you and those stories that you're telling are shaping them to create their own stories and live those, right? And so not that you can control the choices they make, but you can influence, and then they're going to create their own stories. And so the way that you're able to impact those stories that they'll then create and pass along is incredibly powerful. So I'll leave it there.
The ripple effect for generations. That's one of my goals. You do some awesome fishing trips. And I know you do fishing trips with entrepreneurs and business owners. And I'd love you to talk about one of the last two you've done and where you've been and where you fly fished. You took a redfish trip recently, and then I know you've fished up in Montana a few times.
Yeah, so what I've seen is I've been doing therapeutic storytelling and fly fishing trips with veterans since about 2018. And what I saw was just how much when we're away from it all and in that peaceful environment, whether you're catching fish or not, as you know, it's about the fishing, not the the catching necessarily. It really opens us up. And what I've seen with leaders is just the need to and desire to connect with other people like them. And so I thought, hey, what if I could provide those same type of experiences? So those experiences, I've called them narrative on the fly, is the way I'm starting to shape it. And it's still, you know, it's still evolving, and but it's kind of 4 nights or 3 days and 1 day of fishing, and then a workshop, a storytelling workshop, where we do some of the same type of work you and I do, where I actually interview a leader so you can actually be a part of the interview and feel it and experience it and interact with it. And then another day of fishing. So, did the first one, in January, down in Texas on the coast, maybe February, it's all running together now, but fishing for redfish. And if you haven't fished for redfish, I mean, I know you have down in Louisiana, which is the Mecca, but it's amazing. It's more like hunting than fishing.
Yes.
So for me, the trips I'm putting together are right now are Texas, Idaho, and Montana. And it's really that focus on connection.
I'm going to make one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'm excited, but it's really that kind of that connection piece.
And then you pivoted this narrative on the fly with veterans, and talk through some of the stories of the veterans that you've been able to bring back together after they were, you know, after they were injured in combat, and they haven't seen some of their fellow soldiers in a while, and they get together with you. Talk through that experience. The videos I've seen are just tremendous.
Yeah, thank you. So the nonprofit I work with is called the Bar X Project. And historically, it's been mostly Marines. Now it's expanded to all combat veterans. But what we found is that when you reunite units with each other, they may not have seen each other in 15, 20 years, when you reunite them and take them to that spot. So we do all expense paid fly fishing trips in Montana. The healing or the opening up that can occur is really remarkable. So we had, this last year we had a unit who had lost a Marine in Iraq. He wasn't supposed to go on a mission, but he volunteered, cause someone else pretended they had a bad back. So he went out and lost his life. And so they came back together to celebrate his life, and everyone all the way up to the general who gave the command for him to go out was there. And it was, That was when this, you know, prior to that, I would, you know, do a short film at least one a year on one of these trips. And I knew it was so that the families of these warriors could celebrate, could know what they went through and empathize and celebrate them. And I knew it was also for fundraising, but last year was the time where it really clicked for everyone of like, that's not even the most important thing. The most important piece is that going back to how telling your story transforms you, that therapeutic piece. So we had, you know, it was a mix. This was mostly scout snipers, and the way that they opened up and shared. I mean, one guy said that he's like, you know, I haven't talked about this since it happened in probably 17 years or so. You know, we had that. We had a group of Marines who special operations who were falsely accused of murdering something like 19 Afghan women and children. The Taliban accused them, and the military, the government, the press, everyone, because of tons of dynamics that were going on in that moment, plus corruption, threw them under the bus, destroyed their lives. And they were exonerated 12 years later, but it had wrecked them.
12 years, man.
And what was crazy, though, is I know their commanding officer, Fred Galvin, he's since written a book called A Few Bad Men about the corruption. But what's remarkable is for him how he's actually forgiven, been able to forgive the people that did that to them, which I don't know how that's possible, but he did. Tough. So, I mean,
12 years of having your life destroyed and pulled apart.
Yeah.
But to get them back together, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the narrative shifts that can happen, you know, there's this one story we did of these guys who hadn't seen each other in probably 12 years. And it'll often happen that guys will, you know, will have trips booked months in advance. They'll have their ticket, and there are people often that will bail or try to bail at the last minute. So there was one of the guys, the corpsman of this unit, tried to not get on the plane, and someone encouraged him to, and he got there, and he said, you know, within minutes, something shifted for him. There was another guy who said, I've isolated myself for the past 12 or so years because I believe that they're all better Marines than me. And the harm that caused him because he'd isolated and believed that narrative. And he said, within minutes of getting there, all that washed away. And so that piece, like no stories were even told yet, probably. It was just the being present with each other rewrote that for him instantly.
What's the biggest lesson you've taken away spending time with all these veterans, especially the combat wounded veterans?
Whew, let me think for a second. I think the power of creating a space where people know that it's safe to talk, mm-hmm. and creating a space where they can be and show up however, right? I remember my very first trip. You know, I've had my dad is a disabled veteran, not combat disabled, but I grew up going to the VA hospital and I still remember there's this composite image in my head of all the people that I saw. And it was just this heartbreaking image of this guy in a wheelchair that I saw as a kid. And I've had some significant mental health challenges. And I remember the first time I was invited on one of these trips, I was really struggling. And I'm a professional writer. And my buddy said, you know, you should write a paragraph or two describing like who you are and why you're there. Cause he's like, I went on one of these trips. I'm a combat Marine, but I didn't serve with these guys and I felt like an outsider. So you're really going to feel like an outsider. I couldn't even write a single paragraph. Like that's how bad my brain was shut down from what I was dealing with in that moment. And so I just showed up. And what was crazy is within 30 minutes, their commanding officer comes up to me and he says, and this guy was aggressive. I'm tall. Like he was like probably a good 2 inches taller than me, but he comes up to me and says, you know, I'm 40 years old. I make four times what the rest of my family makes combined. I'm single and I'm miserable. And I don't know what the meaning of life is, something to that effect. And by the end of that trip, I had a guy say, you know, I've been going to the VA for 10 years and I've never been able to share a fraction of the things I've shared with you this week. And what hits me is that, you know, my dream was to go into the military and I got accepted to Virginia Military Institute. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I
haven't heard this.
Developed Crohn's disease. And so I'm the only person I've ever met who got accepted to a college and then disaccepted. I made up that word just for my own scenario. But it was, for years, it was a source of insecurity and anger. You know, why did I get the short end of the stick? And why were my dreams destroyed and that sort of thing. And I eventually had a Marine tell me like, Chris, like there's plenty of people who can do what we do, but like, because of what you've been through, and because of how you're wired, you're able to help tell our stories or help us tell our stories. Yeah. Right. And so for me, I would say that's actually the most powerful part for me is also how my own narrative has been rewritten.
That's wonderful. Where can, of our listeners, where can they go and watch some of these videos and see your work and follow the great impact you're making on the world?
Yeah. So I can share a link, thestoriedfuture.com/work. And then, but I can share some links as well for barxproject.org as well.
Okay. And I'll put these on the podcast. We'll have them on the podcast page. So what's next in your work? Assessments, coaching, maybe you want to talk a little bit about AI and how that's affecting you, whatever's on your mind on your next work project that you're on.
Yeah. So the thing I'm most excited about right now is what I'm calling the storied executive.
Okay.
And so really working with people who, again, like I said, they come to me for, generally I'm working with high performing midlife leaders who are who need to tell their story to unlock what's next, to find a greater sense of purpose, to navigate their identity as they are considering an exit or have just exited, want to launch a new company, but that sort of thing. And so that piece that I'm calling the storied executive is really around how do we start to help even more people with that. And so the way I'm doing that, I'm starting to structure that is with one-day workshops, and then with these experiences, the narrative on the fly experiences, so they can bring together groups of, you know, one-day workshops might be 15 to 20 people, and then these fishing experiences might be 6 to 8 different leaders, and starting to do that. And then on the AI side, I've been, because like going back to before, the most business storytelling focuses on the structure and delivery, and a lot of it is an inputs challenge. And so I'm working with a company, the former chief data scientist for Korn Ferry, and then a dev psych professor at Columbia. They basically take in my atomic storytelling framework, and we actually have a working demo right now that's AI storytelling coach. So imagine you're trying to train leaders across a large company. It can train them in different scenarios against a rubric and then measure their growth over time. But what it's helping them do is not, you know, like ChatGPT writing content, like writing stories for them. It's actually pulling out. So pulling out the inputs. So you tell me, you know, like, hey, Brian, you're going to start a new job tomorrow. You're going to be asked to tell a leadership story. You've got 1 minute to do it. And so you might tell a story, and then I'll say, well, how did you feel when your manager looked at you that way? What decisions did you make as a result? So it's pulling out those inputs. But the idea is really starting to think about, okay, what are ways that can take the frameworks and really help people at scale? So you imagine veterans in transition. You imagine people with chronic illness, retirees, et cetera. So that's one aspect. Another piece that I'm really excited about is the idea of, you know, executive brand is supposed to lead people from awareness to confidence to trust in who you are as a leader. And so looking at ways to start helping leadership teams and measuring trust. So there's an organization that has, there's a professor, Angus Fletcher, in the narrative science department or project at Ohio State. And we're exploring actually doing a research study on the trust in an existing CEO during succession or transition, and then the trust in a new CEO with one group that hears their story and one group that doesn't, right? So to be able to start to measure trust over time through storytelling. So those are a few things I'm cooking up.
That's awesome. That's going to be amazing when you get that created to help. Instead of having to do it one-on-one, that you can do it one-on-many with the AI generative tool. That'll be fine. To pull that through and the questions you get to load into there,
yeah.
You know, for it to pull through.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, I know for me, you've helped me get my chaos. You've turned my chaos into more clarity and then helped turn my stories into strategy. And I want to thank you for that. You've had an amazing impact on me. And I really appreciate the time and the work that you've poured into me to help me figure this out for myself. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian. I appreciate you trusting me, and it's absolute privilege. I tell people all the time, because I've had some clients that I work with where it can be energy depleting at times. And I remember telling people, I'm like, man, every time I meet with Brian, I'm like happy for 2 days after. It takes a long time for that Brian effect to wear off, which is awesome. I'll take it anytime.
You'll take it when you get it in large doses. Oh my, that's fantastic. Final word from you, anything you want to share with our audience on storytelling, any encouragement or things to think about? A final word, yours.
Yeah, so I think, you know, sometimes people ask me how do you become a better storyteller, and so I encourage people to start with story listening. And this old farmer philosopher that I knew, he said to me one day, and it was kind of offended me. He said, "Chris, you're not a storyteller," and I'm like, "What? Sure I am." He said, "No, you're a story discerner," and kind of seeing those unseen connections, right? So I think that's a an important piece is asking good questions and listening well. And the more you do that for others and gifting that to others, I think that opens you up to kind of your own story as well. And then I think the second piece would be just the encouragement to people to tell their story, because when you do tell your story, it can change you, it can change your company, and it can change the world. But if you hold that back, you know, in some ways you can be holding a gift back for all of those people.
You've been listening to Successful Chaos Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Sarf. With me this week is Chris Hare from The Storied Future. And let's make the second half of your life the most powerful chapter yet. Your amazing life of significance starts here. All right, that's it.